TheBookBookBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 28th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we wrap up the shortest month of the year and then head into the month of madness, March, coming up. Of course, we've got tons of conference tournament stuff on the horizon, and then also the NCAA tournament with the field of 68. So lots of great stuff coming your way here on Bang the Book Radio over the next several weeks. One half of our Tuesday meeting show with us here today, that's Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. We'll go over our sports wagering talk segment with him, talking college basketball, also the NBA. Prior commitment for sports, Chito, we won't hear from him today. We'll try and see if we can get something with him done later in the week. If not, we'll just talk to him next week because I know he'll have a lot to say about conference tournaments. So good show coming your way here today. I'll chat in the second half of today's show, a little bit of my baseball stuff. Also talk about some of these other college basketball conference tournaments now that we have odds out for some of those. But have no fear, the show will go on and we will have a full show. One quick reminder before I bring Brian on, as I talked about yesterday, looking at just doing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday shows the next 2 weeks with conference tournaments and March Madness. We've got a lot of other things going on. Obviously, it's going to be challenging for our guests to come on. Also, you know, there's going to be betting opportunities going on in those mornings. So hoping to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll have extended shows. Some of them may be as much as 2 hours. We'll see how everything goes. We'll cut everything into segments as we usually do, but just wanted to make sure that I gave you a heads up about that here on today's show. So bring on today's first and only guest. That is Mr. Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, how are you today, man?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, lots of things to get to here. As I said, of course, we've got the last day of February today, conference tournaments, March Madness, spring training baseball. I know you go to spring training every year, so I'm sure you're looking forward to that. I guess the place to start here with today is conference tournaments. We had the Atlantic Sun tip off last night. I believe Big South tips off tonight. So there's conference tournament action already going on. I want to talk about your approach here overall to conference tournaments. We talked on yesterday's show with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com about playing pre-tournament futures and looking for value and opportunities with that. Is that something that you do?
I haven't in the past. I may do a little bit this year, but for the smaller tournaments, the ones that are going on right now, my feeling is if I don't handicap it during the regular season, somebody, the lines maker, is going to know more about it than I do. So I don't get invested in those tournaments. If it's a regular board team or regular board tournament, then it, at least I'm equal in that regard. So then at that point, I can feel pretty well when I go into them. But as for the futures, I haven't done a lot in the past, but you could set yourself up with some nice hedges, which I've already started doing for the NCAA tournament, and I think that's the way you go about it.
The Big South does begin tonight, also the Patriot League. And that is a really interesting market. I mean, for somebody like you, you know, you are a professional bettor. You're always looking for opportunities. I feel like these conference tournaments do give you a lot of good opportunities because you have a lot of options. You know, you have situations where you take a favorite because if they make it all the way through, it's going to be a better price than you get on the money line. Sometimes teams get double buys, so you've got easy hedging opportunities there. So as somebody that is going to dive into it a little bit more here this year, the fact that you already have a good understanding of hedging, of bankroll management, those types of things, obviously puts you in an advantageous position. But what are your starting points going to be here as you look to dive into that portion of the market?
Well, actually, I don't think I'm going to do much on those, the smaller ones. Once we get into the regular conference tournaments, that's what I'll be working on. But I'll take a look of, you know, basically I want to go against the public teams, the teams around the bubble, that kind of thing, because you're always going to get a better price. That's one of the things that I take a look at. And, you know, a lot of what I do is power ratings. And I'm not sure when you're taking a look at your conference tournaments that you're going to be able to make a lot of value out of the power ratings because not every team has the same goals in this tournament. Some just want to get out there and play a little bit. Others actually think they can win. And, you know, the value you find is usually if a team during half a season or whatever, and they brought some players on from Couldn't make grades earlier in the season, or they had guys coming back from injury. They started off the season bad, so they were not going to play well and not going to get a good record on the season. But once the tournament starts, that's when they get a chance. That's what they point to towards, and you can find some value on those type of teams.
You know, that's a really interesting point. As you said, motivations are different. I mean, once we get to the bigger conference tournaments, the ones that'll start off next week, where there are multiple bids per conference, you know, there are teams that already know that they're going to March Madness. It's really only a matter of seeding at that point. They certainly do have, you know, different motivations than a team, as you said, that's on the bubble or somebody that's maybe even on the outside looking in, trying to roll through a tournament and steal a bid. I mean, you think about Seton Hall last year. They were a team that may have probably wouldn't have made the tournament, but they wound up rolling through, winning the Big East Conference tournament. Then all of a sudden they find themselves in the big dance. So we will have the narrative of bid stealers. We will have all this talk, you know, about things going on in these conference tournaments. There is one coming up here this week that I do want to talk about with you, a conference that, you know, obviously gets a lot of play. That's the Missouri Valley, where you've got Illinois State as the number one seed. But they're a heavy underdog here. They're plus 425 against Wichita State, who's in the minus 475 range, trying to pull up some current numbers here as I'm talking. But you know, this is a really interesting conference because Wichita State is in, no matter what they do. Illinois State, on the other hand, we're not entirely sure. So does that change the way that you handicap a pre-tournament position?
Well, from a motivational standpoint, you would think that would be a good spot. But then again, you also have the pressure on that team that needs to win and has to win. So it would all depend on what kind of lines you're getting. The numbers you state sound like there's value on the underdog there to win that tournament. But it's something that unless you're fully engulfed in it all season long and you followed these tournaments, because I do power ratings, In the past, I have not had a lot of plays come tournament action because, like I said, it's a motivational thing. And you do find value when you know a team that needs to win or going against those type of teams and teams on the bubble. But other than that, it's tough to handicap because of the team that they played in the regular season, depending on when they played them. They had the same motivation. You play them late in the season and one team's already out of it. Obviously, the motivation is not there anymore. You should get full motivation from all the teams that aren't going to make the playoffs or aren't going to make the tournament. That's pretty much a given. It's the teams that are tournament bound. What do they plan on doing? There's been talk. You know, I've heard from coaches. You know, Gonzaga just had their first loss. That they go into it and they don't want to lose at all. They don't want their team to feel losses. But then there's other coaches say, well, when you get into a tournament like that and you're playing games, you want to have a team that's been in that position where in the past they've had to been able to come back late in the games. And so it's there's a lot of things out there that if you're up on it, you can take advantage of. But I would rather know from a motivational standpoint, everybody has the same motivation because my numbers are able to tell me where the value is. With the motivational differences, it's a struggle for me.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, this is a very different type of handicap when you talk about the conference tournament format. I mean, when you talk about other sports, you know, the playoffs are the playoffs. When you talk about college basketball, there are really two different sets of playoffs for teams. There's, of course, the conference tournament, and then there's March Madness for those that are fortunate enough to get there. So it is a really unique and really different type of handicap, and that's what I want to ask you about here, and you've sort of mentioned this a little bit in passing as we've been talking. You know, your handicapping style does change a little bit here based on the conference tournaments. As you said, you are more of a power ratings guy, so what adjustments do you make to conference tournaments? I mean, you talked about motivation already. Motivation can be the same for both teams. At that point, do you then go back to your power ratings?
Yeah, if I feel that the motivation is the same, I do use the power ratings. But I also look at what they have done head-to-head in conference action. If teams are pretty equal, and I did a video last Wednesday with Marco D'Angelo and the guys over at Wager Talk, we were talking about the UCLA-Arizona game. And my feeling was, since UCLA was blown out at home and the teams were pretty equal, there's been talk between us about who we had better, but pretty much they were pretty equal. I thought UCLA going to Arizona would have an advantage because they'd already lost to that team at home and they're pretty equal. Now I take a look at that come tournament time, and if I see a team that's won twice against that team and they're pretty equal, I would tend to look towards the team that hadn't won yet, thinking it's more of a fluke than a domination. But there's other times when you just have teams that just don't match up very well. And we see that all the time. So you've got to go back and take a look at how they've done against that team before, how they've done against teams similar to that. For example, last night we saw the North Carolina-Virginia game. This is why handicapping sports is so hard. Just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, North Carolina just ran Virginia out of the court. They couldn't miss a shot. Virginia didn't have any playmakers on that team enough to create their own shots, and it was a crushing loss. Everybody had written Virginia off. Now, all of a sudden, Virginia comes back, holds North Carolina to 43 points. I don't know what kind of odds you would have gotten on if I had given somebody, okay, over under 43 points on North Carolina if we'd had any takers on the under in that game. But it just goes to show what teams on a given night can do and the changes you make in your game plan. Obviously, Virginia knew that they couldn't compete with North Carolina running the court, so obviously they didn't want to do that. It was telling about North Carolina because normally teams that you see, a UCLA, a North Carolina, teams that could score a lot of points, at least in my mind, they have an advantage once they get into the tournaments because even on a bad shooting day, they can still put up points where you have your Virginians and some of those other teams, Wisconsin teams in the past, that if they don't hit their shots at all, they're having a really hard time because they just don't take enough shots and they take so much time off the clock. So the differences in pace, differences in the way these teams play, you want to take a look at how they've done against those type of teams in the past.
Well, it's interesting you bring up that game. I mean, I know that I was reading Cheetah and Aaron Kessler and some other people out there in Vegas talking about how it was one of the biggest sharp versus splits games that they had seen in a very long time, with Virginia being the sharp side there in that spot. And you talk about we've talked about this before on our segments about the long hours of being a handicapper. And you know, you did pick up on something in that first meeting. It was something that I noticed as well, something I talked about with Cheetah. I don't know if it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Virginia was just settling for a bunch of three-pointers in that game at Chapel Hill. You know, they weren't the same team that they usually are. They weren't running through their offensive progressions, and it looked really bad, as you mentioned. But, you know, Tony Bennett's team made adjustments, and we saw what happened. We saw what the outcome was, and that was not a good showing for North Carolina. But it is one of those games where you look at Virginia and go, you know what, maybe too many people wrote this team off too early, and those are things that you always need to be looking for here at this time of the year in college basketball. We'll talk a little bit more about the regular season in a second, but I do want to ask you about this. As you mentioned, you don't really handicap a lot of those smaller tournaments where the higher seeded team is hosting the game. So we won't talk about that, but what about putting in provisions for some home court advantages in neutral site tournaments? For example, the Horizon League is played at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Oakland is very close. Obviously Detroit Mercy is right there in town. The MAAC is at the Times Union Center in Albany. Siena is in Albany, New York. There are some teams that are closer to these venues than others. How do you account for that in your conference tournament handicapping?
I think it's more important if the team has played on that court before as opposed to any type of advantage with the fans. I know, for example, here at Vegas, UNLV always hosts the tournament, and this is going to be interesting this year how bad they are. What kind of showing all the other teams are going to buy out all these tickets. But UNLV situation is once the game start, there's a contingency of UNLV fans when they're in it. And but they always have other teams that travel well. BYU's always travel well. New Mexico's always travel well. And they've always played well in this tournament. Having that backing of the local fans in the bigger conferences is an advantage. In the smaller conferences, I'm not so sure it is. I don't know if they, you know, when you're only holding 2,000 fans in your own stadium and you're not selling out, How much of a trip are they looking forward to go to some of these neutral site games? So I don't think the fan activity really makes much difference, but teams being able to say that they have played in this building before, I think, is an advantage.
Well, there are some very interesting ones. I mean, there are four conference tournaments that are held out there in Las Vegas, including the West Coast Conference, which we'll talk about here in a second. We've got the SEC Conference Tournament is in Nashville. Obviously, Nashville is a destination. You know, there's a lot of fan support there for all of those schools because, you know, boosters and all those types of things just go to Nashville for a vacation and just also happen to go to the conference tournament as well. So, you know, those are certainly places where maybe being a home team like Vanderbilt, for example, for the SEC doesn't really mean a whole lot, probably, I wouldn't think. But you mentioned the West Coast Conference. You mentioned what happened with Gonzaga there, losing a game. I think this is a question I posed last week to one of our handicappers. I don't remember if it was you or not. But it's almost better for Gonzaga that they lost a game at this point, right?
I don't know if I buy into that. I can understand what you're saying. But my feeling is, and they had the Vanderbilt, or excuse me, the Villanova coach on one of the shows I was watching yesterday, and he was talking about that. He said the thought process in the player's mind of nobody's beaten me, that comes into effect. And now that they've been beaten, do they have the same feeling that they can't be beat? I don't know if that's such an edge or not. I would have rather had them come into the tournament undefeated, because once you get into the action, nobody remembers a 33-0 or whatever they would have been. All they know is they're advancing to the next level of the tournament. So it's two different ways to look at it. But some coaches say that, yeah, it was good to be in that position. I think the loss, depending on how you lost the game, if it was a game you just were blown out, or if it's a game that went down to the wire and you had to make your adjustments at the end of the game, I think that's obviously more advantageous for a team. If you are going to lose, at least you've been in that position before, as opposed to a blowout game when you just didn't have it. So it's two ways to look at it. And you know, I don't think there's any database out there that has the stats on something like that. But personally, I would, if it was me and I was part of that team, I want to be undefeated. I want to take it all the way. I want to be a completely undefeated team in the tournament. And if nobody's been able to beat me or come close because they've crushed everybody, I want to be that. So I don't know if the loss is helping them from my regard, but there's two ways to look at that.
Well, there are two ways to look at it, and that's part of the thing here at this time of the year. You get some narratives like that, and of course Gonzaga was the only unbeaten team that we had left, and they've been the only unbeaten team for a while. You know, we saw Kentucky a few years ago, you know, have a really deep unbeaten run and didn't work out for them. Another one of the narratives here at this time of the season is that it's really hard to beat a team three times in one season. Where you're going to hear that. I guarantee you're going to hear that. I imagine there are some pick sellers out there that will justify a play based on that. How do you feel about that angle?
Actually, I don't know the numbers, but I have read where it's a fallacy that you can't beat the same team three times. The team that has won the first two actually does pretty well. It's something like 52% or nothing major. But because of a lot of people think that that's the truth, you get value in the line. So if it's a situation where maybe I'm catching this team that lost, they played the first game of the tournament, and they entered the tournament off of a loss, and they were favored. And now I've always liked backing a team off of a loss, playing another team that they know that they can beat. And so that would put me in the first game of a tournament on a team like, because you go into it and you know you've beaten that team before, you're very confident, and you're able to match up well with them, obviously, because you've beaten them twice already. So I think you get a little bit of an advantage on that. If you find two teams that are relatively equal, as I said before, I would lean more towards the team that hadn't won if the value is there on the line. But everything is individual. I don't think there could be a blanket statement about it.
Well, we'll see how many blanket statements there are out there about it. How about the rest of the college basketball regular season? You know, as I talked about here, we'll talk some more conference tournaments next week when we get some of the bigger leagues. But for the rest of the regular season, again, you've got different motivations across the board. Some teams on the bubble trying to strengthen that resume. other teams want to get a top two or three seed. Maybe they want to get, preferred placement a little bit closer to home, something like that. Do you make any changes here in handicapping the rest of the regular season?
Well, what I do is limit my plays. In fact, yesterday I passed for my clients, but I had three opinions. They were all Paul rating numbers, and they all covered. But I didn't release any to the clients. I just put them out as opinions. But so the numbers are working for the most part, but the motivation obviously is a factor at this time of the season because you have other teams. Some teams looking forward to the tournament. You have other teams that have other motivations. They want to move up in the rankings. They want to be able to get a better seed in the tournament. You mentioned certain tournaments where you have the buys and things like that. So those are important. You have to take that into account. But the motivational edges near the end of the season are always different. Even going back to the NBA, and I've talked about this in the past, but I'll bring it back up again. My best seasons in the NBA, I would have done really well if you just take off the last month of the season, because you have teams tanking, you have teams that are fighting for the playoffs, and sometimes the line gets out of hand because, as we talked about, teams in must-win situations. And I found going over the years that my NBA the last month, because of the questions involved, haven't done as well. So in that case, like I plan on doing this year, is I just minimize my plays. And I think that's something that you have to do, whether it's the end of any season. For football, we've always said two teams at the end of the season that aren't going to the playoffs in the NFL, you bet the over. Neither team is overly preparing for defensive in those games. They want the season to end. So there's certain things in every sport we take a look at that as the season progresses, you have to play it differently as the season goes on.
So we'll sort of intro then and transition over from the regular season to the conference tournaments then. So you're limiting your exposure for the rest of the regular season. When we get to conference tournaments, everybody's motivations, as we talked about, are not the same. You have to think that, once we do get on the floor, these teams do want to play. Now, the question is, you're going to have a lot more public involvement here in college basketball the rest of the way. We've already seen more public involvement. It's just going to continue to grow by leaps and bounds until the national championship is decided on April 3rd. So when you get to conference tournament time, then what sorts of adjustments do you make?
You find that there is more value on playing the middle of the road teams in the big conference, at least in my regards, because you've got, I think, Brad talked about this the other day, that he went back and he looked at how the dominant teams in college sports, the Kentuckys, the Kansas, things of that sort, once the public gets involved after football ends, they don't do as well against the spread. I think you can compound that when the tournament starts, because the teams that have been playing on ESPN that the casual bettors have been betting on all season long, they know those teams. They know that the teams that have been playing and had a lot of success in those conferences. So if you're lucky to play the Kansases, the Villanovas, the Kentuckys, those type of teams, you're probably going to end up paying an extra premium for it. What I try to do is look for teams in the middle of those conferences that are playing 500 ball. For example, I played a future on Iowa State to win the national championship at like plus 165 earlier. I found a Wake Forest at 1,000-1. Obviously, they're probably going to have to win the tournament or come pretty close to make the tournament. But if they make that tournament, I've got a hedge possibility right off the bat in the first game where I can make my money back going against them. So I'm just trying to set up hedge opportunities. I know Cheetah does a lot of this stuff. So if you're looking to pick teams in those conference tournaments, I like the teams that the only way they're going to make the tournament is if they have a good showing in the tournament. You talked about Seton Hall last year coming out of nowhere. Those are the kind of teams that I want to back on, especially if they've gotten better as the season's going on. They picked up, as I said, they picked up players that make grades, and they've played better as the season's gone on, and a lot of people don't pay much attention to them.
How do you change your handicapping based on the fact that teams are playing on consecutive days? I mean, this is something that we don't see in college basketball. Maybe the early season tournaments you'll see it, but it's something that they haven't done here for 3 or 4 months where they're playing on back-to-back days. How does that change things for you?
Yeah, it's two ways to think about that. I they have a lot of tournaments out here in Las Vegas, and there's not a lot of interest in it. So I've been able to sit up, you know, a couple times I've been able to sit on the floor, watch the games. And you see these teams play, and the first day they look terrible. And then they get the matchup for the second day, and I said, this team is, should crush this squad. And it's a total different ball club because you haven't seen them before. You've seen the one game, and I talk about this by watching games on TV all the time. If you see a team play one or two times, you don't know really how good that team is. You've got to watch them all the time. And so you find the team that looked terrible the one night comes back and plays good the next night. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to handicap these games. The one thing I will say is keep a look, even though these are kids and, you know, they're used to playing every day, check out how deep they go in the bench. Sometimes teams, you know, Ralph Macchio has talked about Southern Miss in the past, how they went when they only have like a day between that they really struggled in that second game, although they looked really good against North Texas this Saturday. But teams that don't have a lot of depth in the back-to-back really run into trouble for the most part. You think a few years ago, Georgia had to play five games in 5 days. And everybody thought that Georgia was in a terrible situation. They were never going to come out and play. If my memory serves, they were 5-0 against the spread in those games because people kept thinking, they've got to be tired. These are 20-year-old kids. They love playing basketball. On their days off, they're playing basketball anyway. It's not that they're in a regular game, but they're going to practice. They're sticking around. They're playing, you know, one-on-one with some other players. They're young. It's not the NBA that you've got an 82-game grind. So there's two ways to think about it. You don't want to play on a team that has a lack of depth, but don't be afraid to play on teams that are playing two games in a row, 2 days in a row, 3 days in a row, because these are kids, and they've done this their entire lives.
Well, before we transition over to the professionals and chat a little bit of NBA here tonight, I know you said you had a few opinions that you threw out yesterday for your clients. Do you have any opinions for college basketball tonight that our listeners might be interested in?
I haven't finalized my card for today, but there's a couple of games to look at. Kent State's at Bowling Green right now. I only made Kent State one. The line's basically 3, 3.5. I'm leaning with the dog in that one. DePaul's at Providence. I made the line 14. Line's only about 11.5 right now. I'm leaning with Providence in that game. Don't know if I'll use either of these, but I will put them up at least as opinions for my clients. So we've got a couple of home teams here, one home dog and one home favorite, that I think by the numbers have some value.
All right, well, let's move over to the NBA here. Obviously, coming out of the All-Star break, coming out of the trade deadline, you've had to make some adjustments to your power ratings. This is what happens when we get transactions and the NHL trade deadline coming up. I think it's tomorrow, so there'll be a lot of trades on the NHL as well. A very interesting time of year. You get a lot of knee-jerk snap analysis on these trades and how they're going to help teams and this and that. Let's start with the biggest one in the NBA, DeMarcus Cousins going to the Pelicans. How much of a power ratings change did you make?
Well, it depends. After the trade, I made about 3. As the season goes on and he becomes more of a focal point in the offense, I may be higher. On Basketball Reference, you take a look at value over replacement players. Cousins is 4.7, which is one of the highest in the league, probably a top 10. So they're saying over a backup at his position, he's worth 4.7 points. A lot of it depends on the teams you play on. Obviously, your Golden State, your Cleveland, you're going to get a lot of guys that have good numbers because they play on good teams. But the situation going over there, I think it's going to be a little bit lessened because he was the main guy in Sacramento. And as I've talked about, he could be, in fact, I think he is the most dominant player in the NBA. When he's on, when he's focused, you can't stop him. The problem is when they made the trade, they lost a lot of their depth. And so we're going to have to play it by ear as we see them go on. It's probably going to end up about a 4-point adjustment. But when you lose the players on the bench, the outside shooting, it's going to make a difference, especially on that team when you got two guys underneath that make most of their bread and butter underneath the basket. You're going to have shooters on the outside. And as we've seen from being Cleveland fans over the years, it's such a different game when you've got guys that could consistently hit from 3-point. We'll have to see how this Pelicans team works out.
some of the best trades, both in the NBA and the NHL, are guys that aren't superstars. You know, they're not really notable players. I mean, we'll see what happens with the Capitals getting Kevin Shattenkirk, who's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. I'm sure that'll help them out tremendously. But you have deals like Martin Hanzel, for example, who went to Minnesota for a large package of picks and players. But he's not really a point scorer. He's more of a defensive type of player. We see these role guys get moved around in these leagues all the time. So I want to ask you about a couple here in the NBA. Bojan Bogdanovic, who goes from Brooklyn to Washington. Again, not a household name, but he's still a guy that you have to account for in your power ratings, right?
Well, you take a look at his VORP, and it's actually a negative. I think it's negative 0.3, but you got to realize the team he's playing on. When you watch the Nets, he was one of the few guys that could actually create his own shot. He would take, in my mind, he would take a lot of bad shots because they don't have enough offensive players in Brooklyn to surround him. Now that he's on a team where he doesn't have to take those big shots, I think he's going to be a nice advantage there. For example, Kyle Lowry. He's done the trade, but he's been injured, and he may be out for the rest of the regular season. His VORP value over replacement player is 4.5. Right now, Toronto's playing a pretty good ball without him, but I think we're going to find value on going against Toronto in the next couple of weeks because he basically ran that team. He's one of the top point guards. If you're looking at value over replacement player, other than James Harden, he was second best in Westbrook. He's like one of the top five in the country. So they're playing really well right now. People are going to start thinking, you know, well, maybe he didn't make that much of a difference. No, Lowry is a hell of a ball player. He's an all-star player. And as Toronto goes on here, we may be able to get some nice numbers going against them.
In terms of these role player deals, talk about a guy like PJ Tucker going to Toronto. Do you make a quantifiable power ratings adjustment or does it just sort of, you know, change your perception a little bit of that team and, you know, of their ceiling, I guess?
Well, it helps them defensively. They made nice trades and nice pickups lately for the defensive side. Tucker, I believe, is like a 1.5 or something like that on the value over replacement player, but he's a good defensive player. The other trades they've made have been good defensive players, and now you've got guys on that team when Lowry comes back healthy, guys that could create their own shots. And then on the other end of the court, you've got guys that can match up against the quality players of, you know, LeBron James. In fact, Tucker was one of the guys that was rumored to possibly go to Cleveland because LeBron liked him and he would be a nice fit in Cleveland. So those are good pickups. Those are under the radar pickups that may not change the line in these games, but they should, and the teams will be better for it. And if Toronto is healthy once Lowry comes back, they would be a nice matchup. I don't know what you'd get, probably a really good price against Cleveland. I don't know if they'll beat Cleveland, but they could take Cleveland to the full limit. They played them well last year in the playoffs.
One final talking point here about the NBA, and that's about the theory of contrarian betting. You look at last night's action, and maybe this was just an outlier, and we can talk about that a little bit as we go along here, but underdogs did really, really well in the NBA yesterday. We have a lot of people getting invested in the NBA. You know, they're getting back to the sports books with March Madness coming up here. You know, so they're looking for things to play on a regular basis, the NBA going to pop up. So, again, we should see a more public involvement across the board in the sports that are going on here with college basketball getting so close to the postseason. So does that change your NBA approach at all? I mean, are you starting to look a little bit more at the underdogs? What do you think?
I think a lot of it, and I hate to make a judgment like this, but a lot in the NBA depends on the day of the week. And what I mean by that is for years, you know, a lot of NBA players have said they don't like going to Sacramento. Sacramento on Tuesday nights used to be gold because there's nothing to do at Sacramento. Guys on the Tuesday night, they're just playing out the string. They're waiting for the weekend games. They're waiting to get on TNT. You're waiting to go to, you know, New York, Los Angeles, Miami, that kind of things. So if you've got guys that are used to being on TV, your quality teams, I could see them having a little bit of a letdown on a Monday or a Tuesday. You saw Golden State in Philadelphia yesterday. that was one of the situations. Houston played a home against Indiana. Non-conference game didn't really mean that much to them. So teams on Mondays and Tuesdays, I think, you know, I don't have the numbers to go back and see how dogs have done, but I would think in those games, it's better to take a dog, especially if he has a chance to win the game. They continue to play hard the entire game. Usually on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday televised games, things like that, I would tend to take the better players, knowing that they could turn it on for that game. So from an individual day basis, I think there's value on taking a look at the day of the week, because there's been times where I've gone through my NBA schedule at the end of the week, and I win on certain days, and then I consistently lose on other certain days. And I play dogs, so I know which days are better to play the dogs. It may not make a big difference, 48%, 53%, but in the long run, you're doing better playing dogs on those type of nights. So just try to keep in mind, if you're looking at, for example, the Miami Heat or the Chicago Bulls, now that Wade is there, if you see Cleveland on the schedule, you know Wade's coming out. He's giving it all. When you see Carmelo Anthony on the schedule for LeBron James, you know, since they're friends, he's coming out. He's giving it all that game. NBA players, they play 82 games day in and day out. They're going to circle certain days, certain places where they're going to play. That's one of the reasons why the Knicks have been so bad as of late, is everybody gets up to play in the Garden. Well, it just so happens the Knicks stink, and they've been bad for a long time. And the other team still doesn't care. It's not the team they're playing. It's the place they're playing. And the Lakers out in L.A. kind of have the same situation. So we'll have to see how long it takes the Knicks to pull it out. It's going to be tough for them. I pay a lot more attention to the days of the week than a lot of people do.
Lots of good insights on today's show from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, what's going on over at the website right now?
Getting set to do videos on Wednesday. We've got some MMA guys coming up this week. The head of Cantor Gaming's there. He's a huge MMA fan, Mr. Holt. He'll be there. Scott Sprites will be there talking MMA with them. And obviously we'll be talking some baseball and some basketball, obviously, with the tournaments coming up. Videos for all that on Wednesday. It's $2 Tuesday up on the site today. I won as a $2 Tuesday last week. I don't know who the $2 Tuesday is guy this week, but if you want to check out the website over at wagertalk.com, you can check out one of our top handicappers for only $2 to get his play for today.
And at B Leonard Sports on Twitter, that's Brian's Twitter handle. Brian, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot. Best of luck to everyone.
Good stuff there today from Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com. Plenty of stuff for me to talk about here to wrap up today's show. Obviously, there are a lot of things going on. I mentioned that Kevin Shattenkirk deal to the Capitals. The NHL trade deadline was always really fun to me. I mean, I used to skip classes in college to watch all the trade deadline coverage. Of course, you know, I'd be tuned into whatever computer lab I could in high school, since, you know, smartphones weren't really a thing back then. But you know, the trade deadline, a whole lot of fun. So we'll see a lot of different things going on. The Shattenkirk deal is phenomenal for the Capitals. They're going for it. They are putting their chips all in, and they should. But this is a team that has a lot of good regular seasons and a lot of playoff disappointments lately. This is a move they needed to make. You know, when you're that close, you got to go for it. It's like something what the Indians have done, for example. They're that close, they go and get Edwin Encarnacion to bolster the lineup. I appreciate teams that do that. I think it sends a message to the roster. It sends a message to the fan base. It's very, very important for these teams when they're on the cusp to go and do something. And the Capitals definitely went and did something. I'm sure their futures price has already been adjusted. I haven't really looked as of yet, but lots of NHL deals coming down the pipeline here over the next couple of days, because, you know, you have a lot of situations in the NHL where you need depth. You need role players. You need guys that could step in and fill defensive roles. And, you know, you are thinking towards the playoffs. I mean, for example, for the Capitals, you know, they're thinking with Kevin Shattenkirk, A, we're getting one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. B, he's going to help on our power play. When you talk about the playoffs, you talk about a lower scoring environment, you need to score on the power play. You have to take advantage of those power play chances. So they go and get Shattenkirk, a guy that can really help on the power play. You know, for Minnesota, they go and get Martin Hanzel. Well, think about it. Who is Minnesota probably going to wind up playing in the postseason? The Chicago Blackhawks. You need a guy like Martin Hansel that can play against Jonathan Toews, that can play against Panarin, that can play against Kane. You know, you need those types of guys. So teams are going out there and filling needs, and they're willing to pay for it, and that makes it a whole lot of fun. I really enjoy the NHL trade deadline. It's one that I've always followed closely, and one that I will definitely follow closely here as we approach that. But a couple of other things I want to talk about here. I want to talk for a second about college basketball in these conference tournaments. So because we were trying to cram a whole lot of stuff in yesterday, our segment with Kyle Hunter, I'm not sure that we fully explained the concepts to the level that we needed to. So I think now is a good chance to do that. I was hoping to do that with Sports Cheetah today. Unfortunately, a prior commitment, he couldn't make it. But there are a few distinctions that I really need to make here about playing these conference tournaments. We did talk about some of these things yesterday. You know, like I said, for example, in the Ohio Valley, a team like Belmont, you know, Belmont is the best team in that league. They're going to be a little bit bigger than a minus 160 favorite in the championship game, depending on who they play and assuming that they make it there. They'll probably be more like a 250, 275 price, something like that. So if you like that minus 160, then you already have set yourself up in pretty decent shape because you're going to get line value based on what the money line would be for a championship round. The goal of every futures bet you make, with the exception of win totals, is to guarantee profit. You want to put yourself in a position to make money. It is a little bit of a longer-term investment. Of course, these conference tournaments are short-term investments because they're done in the span of 4 or 5 days generally. But you want to set yourself up to make money. That's why when we talk about looking for teams, you know, that are at reasonable prices for some hedging possibilities, you're looking to guarantee money. If you start with a big enough ticket, you have hedging opportunity. You have room to hedge there. You know, if you like a team that's in the 1,200 range, 1,500 range, something like that, hedging is very easy. You don't need a whole lot out of that team because we're talking about a small sample size tournament. We're talking about money lines of teams that are relatively equal once you get to the quarterfinals and the semifinals, unless you've got something like the West Coast Conference where Gonzaga is just so much better than everyone else. But you put yourself in positions to make money. That's the end goal of everything in handicapping, is try and put yourself in a position to make money. When it comes to futures, you put yourself in position to hedge. If you pick the winner, that's fantastic. The way that I think we need to talk about futures here on this show going forward is that you're not handicapping the winner, you're handicapping the market. You're handicapping the ability to make money. You want to look for those spots where teams, maybe get a little bit of extra rest from the quarterfinals to the semifinals. You want to get those spots where maybe a team's already beaten the other team twice. And we just talked about with Brian Leonard there, that whole beating a team three times in a season fallacy. Don't pay attention to that. Every game is an individual event, and some teams just match up better with other teams, so they're going to beat them three times. So if you find these opportunities in these conference tournaments to make a futures bet, to have hedging possibilities, to have a reasonable shot of that team actually winning the conference tournament, you can make some really good money off of these things. We also talked a little bit in passing about the money line rollover. That's something I want to spend a little bit more time on here on today's show. I'll try to give you some very easy mathematical examples here to go over something like that. So, let's say that you like a team that is, virtually a couple point favorite in the first round. That's a minus. Let's say they're minus 130. So you play minus 130 to win 100. Okay. Then when the next game comes around, you bet 230 to win whatever that amount is. Generally speaking, this is going to go pretty well with teams that are a little bit of longer shots, because what you have to consider is that when you look at the futures market in anything, not just in conference tournaments, but there's a hold percentage that each sports book wants to get out of its futures prices. Because of that, you're not getting the true odds. It's basically just like a house edge if you think about table games. You're playing into the house edge. If you take a team at plus 1,200, their true odds are not plus 1,200 in most cases. Maybe their true odds are plus 1,500. Maybe their true odds are plus 1,800. Maybe they're a little bit higher than that. The books incorporate a hold percentage, and this changes based on the book. It changes based on the exposure they're willing to take, all these types of things. But you're not getting the true price. So what you can do instead is you look to go the money line rollover route. Now, you can calculate this before the tournament if you've got power ratings. If you look back at past games, you know, where you sort of get an idea for what the spreads are going to be, plug them into a spread to money line calculator, and then you can compare and contrast, you know, if the money line rollover works better or if just simply playing the futures price works better. All of this is mathematically based, and you don't have to be good at math to do this. I'm shitty at math. I suck at math. I'm terrible at it. But if you have a working knowledge of the industry, if you have a knowledge of, you know, how implied probability works and how the spread to money line converters work and all that type of thing, you can set yourself up for opportunities to have success. So what you want to look to do is, if you're taking a team that's a fairly long shot, look at that money line rollover versus the futures price and make the smarter investment. Now, to be fair, you know, someone's going to say, look, if I'm rolling over money lines over and over and over again, I get to the semifinals and the team loses, I lost more money than I would have on a future. But you didn't, as long as you start with the same amount you would have started with on a future. So if you want to put $100 on a team at 12-1, you know, you want to start with them at $100 in the first game, and then you go to, you know, let's say they were plus 250, whatever. So you win 250. Your next bet is 350 on the money line. You keep rolling it over. If it loses in the semifinals, you know what you lost? You lost $100. You chose to keep rolling over that money line. You didn't want to take the profit that you had. You lost your initial $100. You didn't lose $700 or $800. You lost $100 because that's the process that you decided to take. Now, if you want to think about it in the sense of, oh, shit, I lost $800. Well, you probably should have hedged. And the nice thing about a money line rollover is that when you hedge, you simply stop. When it comes to a future, you actually need to play that thing out. You know, look for hedging opportunities. You have to put more money at risk with a future because you have to look to hedge it. So, you know, while you are looking to guarantee profit, there are two different ways to go about it. So you have to balance the risk reward a little bit there in terms of looking at how the tournament format sets up. You know, does it reseed? Does team A get more of a layoff between the quarters and the semis and team B, all that type of stuff. I talked about all of those situations in the conference tournament previews that I've written over at bangthebook.com, because some of these are very unique, especially in these smaller conferences. And another thing to keep in mind here is, you know, we talk with Jay Primetown of MMA Oddsbreaker sometimes about the hot prospects in UFC getting set up with matches that, you know, should cater to them. Well, in some of these smaller conferences, the Big West is one of them I know off the top of my head. I can't think of any others right now. But they reseed in an effort to put the best foot forward and put their best team in the tournament. You know, I mean, we've seen it before. I know Hampton a couple of years ago, they were like a 500 team when they got into the tournament. These small conferences don't want that. They want that team top of the standings that can be a Cinderella story. They want that team that can go in, maybe knock off a 3 seed in that 14-3 game or knock off a 4 seed in the 13-4. You know, so all of these tournaments have little quirks and you have to factor those into your handicapping, but you can also use things like that to your advantage when it comes to the futures market. I mean, I know I was looking at the SoCon conference tournament, the Southern Conference, where UNC Greensboro is the number one seed. They are the number one seed. There were 3 teams that tied with 14-4 records, but they got the number one seed based on the tiebreakers. Well, UNC Greensboro, when I looked earlier, and I'll try to double check this here as I'm talking, they were like plus 600 to win the SoCon. They're plus 600 still at BetOnline. They are the number one seed in that tournament. East Tennessee State, the number 3 seed, is plus 150. Chattanooga is plus 375. Furman's plus 425. And then UNC Greensboro. Now, East Tennessee State, per Ken Pomeroy, the best team in that conference. So that's part of the reason why their odds are the way that they are. But that's one of those where you look and you see, you know, a number one seed at 6-1 and you go, okay, do I have any edges that I can play here? You know, does UNC Greensboro get, say, extra rest? You know, maybe they have 4 or 5 more hours of rest before playing on that second day. Some teams don't have that luxury. You know, sometimes the number 2 seed has to play less than 24 hours later. You know, that can be challenging for these teams. So for conference tournaments, scheduling is important. futures prices are very important. And then obviously, as we talked about yesterday with Kyle Hunter, the shooting backdrops are very important. You can look to make some totals plays in these tournaments. They're playing at neutral sites. For example, the Colonial Athletic Association, North Charleston Coliseum for the first time. How does that affect the players going into a new venue that they've never played in before? That can be really hard for a team. You know, you're in an unfamiliar locker room. You don't know your way around. You don't know what's around town. You've never stayed in this hotel before. You don't know what the shooting sight lines look like. These things are all challenging. You know, they may be things that we just take for granted and say, well, these are college basketball players. They shoot 150 shots a day. Won't be a problem for them. That's not how it works. That's not how it works in the real world. So you can look for opportunities in these conference tournaments. That's what's nice about this format. There are so many edges. It's so unique in the sense that you can do these money line rollovers both in conference tournaments and March Madness. You know, there's really no other league where you can do that. Maybe the NFL, I guess, if you wanted to go that route. But the NBA, the NHL, MLB, they're all series. You know, they're all best of seven series. You can't roll a money line over in a best of seven series. I guess you could take serious prices, but that doesn't really seem like a plus EV move there. So the uniqueness of these conference tournaments offers up a lot of different ways to make money. We tried to illustrate some of those on yesterday's show. I'm going to try to keep doing that here with the handicappers throughout the week. Like I said, I'm disappointed Cheetah couldn't make it today because he is the perfect guy to talk to about something like that. Because, you know, he's always making futures prices. He's always looking for investments with a good ROI. A lot of times that's what these conference tournaments can become. So there are situations in which you want to dig a little bit deeper, even if you don't handicap some of these conferences. Let's say you don't handicap the America East. Let's say you don't handicap the Northeast Conference, but you know some of these intricacies about these tournaments. You know, games in the America East played at the higher seeded campus. Vermont's a huge favorite, as they should be. But when you get a minus 325 favorite, someone has to go and play them in the final. Will you have hedging margin if it's Stony Brook at plus 800? You know, what do you need a Vermont number to be to get hedging value at plus 800? Maybe minus 500, minus 550? Are you comfortable with that? Is that enough of a thing for you to do? If Vermont's minus 600 or minus 650, you'll lose some of your hedging value. But those are the decisions that you have to look to make here during the conference tournament portion of the season. And I think it's really good to have the opportunity to talk about this, and it's good to be able to talk about this with different handicappers, because I'm sure a lot of people out there, when they started listening to this show, thought of handicapping in a traditional sense. You know, just playing games after games, days after days. You know, just playing -7, -3.5, +4, that type of thing. There are lots of other markets out there at your disposal where they're probably a little bit less efficient. And if you set it up correctly, you know, you can do some good things. And I mean, look, you know, I can give you an example from yesterday's last night. Kennesaw State and USC Upstate in the Atlantic Sun Conference tournament. I was following along on Twitter with just reading through my timeline. I saw a tip from somebody about, you know, there were a lot of fouls called in the first half of that game. The officials were very whistle happy. So you take something like that, you go and apply it to the second half. Maybe you found yourself an edge. You know, who's thinking of betting second half Atlantic Sun plays? Nobody. Not many people anyway. I'm sure Wes Reynolds did. He's a very high volume guy. But these opportunities are out there. If you look for them, if you know who to follow, if you know where to go. And these are all avenues that I imagine a lot of our listeners didn't really think about prior to this show. And I know it's a lot of things that have opened my eyes as well. You know, even as somebody who's been interested in this stuff for more than a decade, I still learn things every single day. I still learn approaches to these conference tournaments. I still, you know, learn different things from the handicappers that we have on the shows here. And if you can broaden your horizons, it's almost like expanding your investment portfolio. If you're somebody that dabbles in stocks or mutual funds or bonds or whatever else, you're finding new avenues to make money. And ultimately, that's the end goal for all of us here. So if you can use some of these concepts in conference tournaments, if you can look at, you know, what's a better approach to taking in each specific league, I think you can find a whole lot of value by doing things that maybe you didn't think were possible or by doing things that maybe you hadn't even considered. So keep all this stuff in mind. I know that was a lot. I know that we covered a lot on yesterday's show, so I wanted to try and clarify as much as I could to sort of smooth out the process a little bit for you. Got about 5 minutes left for today's show, so I want to chat about my MLB season win totals. I will start posting these this afternoon. All 15 American League teams are done. I went through last night. I plugged in the lines because I had started writing a lot of these before the lines were out at the different offshores. We're going to have a three sports book sample size. We're going to have Five Dimes, DSI, and Bet Online. Went to include Bovada. They don't have their numbers up yet. They're usually slow to do stuff like that. So, you know, if maybe you have Bovada or Heritage. I know Heritage was giving $100 limits on these. You know, whatever your book may be, something in a similar price range is going to be available for you. But I just want to give you a little bit of an overview here as we go into these. First, not every pick is a play. I cannot stress that enough. Not every pick is a play. I give a pick on every team, but sometimes I just don't feel like the margin is there. Sometimes I feel like the team is a little bit too high variance in order to make what amounts to a six-month investment on something. Actually, it's more like 6.5 months at this point. So not every pick is a play. I do talk about the strength of my opinion in each summary. I give a pick on everything because that's what you're supposed to do, but not all of them are going to be really strong plays. I do talk about which ones are the strongest. I do have some that I really, really like in the American League. I'm sure I will have some that I really like in the National League as well as I start to dig into some of those. But, you know, I just want our listeners to be aware, and I want our listeners to realize that, you know, there's a lot of stuff in these articles. The majority of them are 3,000 words. These are deep dives. Now, they do have impact for season win totals, but they're going to have long-ranging impact as well with fantasy and then also with single-game betting. You know, I talk about pitchers that overachieved. I talk about teams that have dropped off defensively. I talk about hitters where I'm looking for regression. I talk about hitters where I'm looking for progression, guys that are going to have some positive regression that maybe you want to take a little bit of a reach on in some of your fantasy leagues. I'll give you one right now. Love Carlos Rodon for this season. Absolutely buying in to Carlos Rodon of the Chicago White Sox. I talk about stuff like that in all of these win totals. You know, I focus on using the sabermetric analysis that I like to use to build a profile for each and every team. As I said, these are long. I totally understand that. I understand sometimes it can be tough for people to, you know, read something that long, to stay focused on something for that long. But I set a standard with these when I first started out with bangthebook.com when I wasn't doing as much stuff, and I wanted to carry that over. So, you know, there's a lot of words here, but there's a lot of really good analysis. There's a lot of good introductory stuff to the sabermetric concepts I will talk about, you know, in my daily write-ups at bangthebook.com and also when I bring back the Bettors Box MLB betting podcast, because I feel like this is the best way to handicap. I feel like the advanced metrics are the way to go. You know, and a lot of line moves come because of things that are found in the advanced metrics. So that'll be something for you to follow as games actually get going. But in terms of these season win totals, I didn't touch on anything with the futures market. I don't have pennant odds. I don't have World Series odds listed in those. I'm looking solely at the season win totals. You know, if you want to ask about any pennant odds, if there's any value in this or that, just hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripod. I'd be happy to answer them for you. But I just wanted to lay out very clearly that not every pick is a play. And again, I do talk about the ones that I like more, the ones that I feel stronger about. But I'm just happy to talk baseball. You know, I really enjoy diving into these teams. I really enjoy looking at the transactions that they've made, seeing what happened last year that led to, you know, their final record, seeing what could happen this year. I think there's a lot of valuable information in there. Not just for you, but also for me. You know, it's good to get my thoughts on paper as well to be able to help you as we go throughout the season. So those will start to go up today at bangthebook.com, beginning with the American League East. I try to post them by division. We'll see how things go here in terms of getting caught up with the National League because I've got conference tournament write-ups left to do, all that type of stuff. But, you know, we still have well over a month until the season. As I talked about already, I don't think you need to rush into any win total plays. I think you want to make sure teams are healthy first because some players really mean a significant amount over the course of 162 games. So I don't think there's any rush to dive in on any of this action as of yet. I will say I think there's one team that you may want to grab right now because I think that win total is going to go down quite a bit. But I'll talk about that when I post that preview. So make sure you head on over to bangthebook.com. Check those out. Check out the conference tournament previews I've been writing up. Other great writers over there doing preview-based stuff, pick of the day, all kinds of things over at bangthebook.com. If you've missed anything here recently, shows are cut down into segments on our podcast page, so you're able to get those. Maybe a chance that I push tomorrow's live recording back to 11:30. I got something to take care of in the morning. I'll see what the time frame looks like for that. But we will be joined by Wes Reynolds for a look at the WGC Mexico Championship. If you are a golf bettor or you're interested in betting golf, this is a segment you don't want to miss because this is a very, very unique event. First time at this course. We'll talk about it a little bit more on tomorrow's show. I'll also fill you in on what's coming up here the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio. So that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.